Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Sub no. Stop. Drop. Shut them down. Open up shop. Oh, no. That's how rough fighters roll. Stop.
Welcome back to the Lacrosse Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor. And today, you know, we have a very unique guest. Kind of the guest that's like, why are you having me on this? But and maybe you don't know who he is, but that's why he's on the podcast, so we can introduce him to you. His name is Chris Deal. He is probably best known as the winner of season three of String League. Chris, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
All right. So just kind of fill everybody in on your background in lacrosse. Like, when did you start playing? Did you play in college? Kind of what were your aspirations there?
Yeah. So I first discovered lacrosse, I think it was probably in around 2001 or 2002. The Memorial Day games were on ESPN, and I just kind of fell in love with watching the game, not really understanding what I was watching, but this is a point where, you know, Kyle Harrison and Johnny Christmas were playing, and they were really exciting. You had Tillman Johnson in net at UVA, and I just gravitated to the sport, and I, you know, got my first lacrosse stick at one of the big box stores and just started playing wall ball by myself. And, you know, we didn't have it when I started picking it up, but eventually our high school program got it. So I played in high school. And then, you know, being from Southern New Jersey, it wasn't a huge thing. A lot of football players played, and, you know, that's basically what it was let's give the football players a weapon in the spring for them to train for the fall. And, you know, there were a couple of kids that had been playing for a while, but it was a new entity in my area. And so I just really gravitated to it, and eventually just had to be that guy. I was the stick repair guy for everybody who always broke their sticks in my high school team. They would just kind of walk over to me at halftime with two broken sidewalls and go, "Hey, can you fix this?" So that's where that all started. And then I went to Essex, which is a junior college in Baltimore, and that kind of just, you know, propelled everything. That was such a higher level of play in the Baltimore area, such a finesse style of play as compared to, you know, our hard-hitting style in Southern New Jersey at the time. And then I went to a small Division II school in North Carolina, Pfeiffer University, where I got to play for Coach Millman, who eventually moved on to Princeton and Cornell. So that was really nice to be under his command. He was a really, really great coach when I was there. And that's my playing experience, really. I played a lot of box in the Northeast and traveled around a lot. But I've been really lucky with where lacrosse has taken me, whether it be playing, coaching, you know, the conventions and meeting new people. And it's been really great for me. So that's why I embrace it so much.
So you mentioned kind of being thrust into the role of stick repair guy. How did that turn into becoming, you know, a stringer?
So the first couple lacrosse sticks I had, you know, I'd get them strung up at the local shop, and I'm kind of a meticulous person, so I would kind of pick apart everything and make sure that it was, you know, completely symmetrical, and, you know, I'm paying for this service. And then I thought, you know what, you could probably do this better. So I would sit there and string and restring and unstring my heads constantly. Like, I would have, oh man, maybe a fresh stick every week. I was like that anal about it. And so I just was the guy that, like, people saw would kind of just mess around with his sticks and dial them in. And a lot of my friends on the team, they knew. And so then, you know, in my spare time, I would fix all these sticks. And then I was like, you know what, I might as well make some money on this. And, you know, that's what it's never really been about, making money. But, you know, I just started working at the local the local mom and pop shop. It was Fudd Lacrosse. A guy from Salisbury had started a little store in South Jersey, and it was literally the only place you could go. None of the big box stores really had much as far as high-end gear. So that we were the end-all, be-all of lacrosse in South Jersey. And so everybody came to me. So it was like, by no effort, I just became the guy for, you know, every high school, every middle school, every person who had a lacrosse stick, boys, girls, goalies. It was just kind of my gig, and I just really grown from there. And it's been kind of an unexpected rise, but it's been a really fun ride, and I'm excited to see where it continues to progress.
So it was kind of born out of necessity of, you know, no one else was doing it.
Exactly. There was no one really in the area who had any expertise. And I'm not going to say I was an expert at that point. It was trial and error. It was heads that had five sidewall holes, and we only had rock hard mesh and six diamond mesh. And, you know, we were throwing together what we could. It's nothing like it is today with everything that's available and all the great products that we have today. But, yeah, it was definitely born out of necessity.
Yeah, man. Walking to school uphill both ways in the snow.
In the snow with no shoes on.
It was tough.
I've heard that many, many times.
Tough life. So how did you just learned kind of like trial and error, or did you actually like go on? I mean, you're kind of in the era of like YouTube's becoming more popular, but did you go on like the forums and learn how to string and stuff like that?
So, you know, as you and Jerry had mentioned last time, the lacrosse forums, I was possibly the most notorious ghost of the lacrosse forums ever. I had just some average username, and I would just go on and just learn all these things that I could, and e-lacrosse for sure was definitely one that I definitely would check on the Stick Tech every once in a while. But those were such good tutorials and forums for me to use to build off of, and I was never really that confident in what I was doing in the beginning to be posting pictures and ask for criticism, because I saw the interaction that people can have online. And I was just like, you know what, I'm going to keep it to myself. And I don't want it to become anything, you know, crazy. And it's just like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to help my teammates. I'm going to help myself. And that's kind of going to be it. But definitely e-lacrosse, lacrosse forums, some YouTube, that kind of came in a little later, but those were definitely my saving graces and the beginning of what has become now a really fun job for me. It's I was an artist as a young man, I guess, and so I kind of turned my artistry from painting and drawing and sketching to making these lacrosse sticks be symmetrical and tight and precise, and that's kind of where that all went, is because I'm very particular about a lot of things. So that's just kind of the way it developed, and definitely used those to my advantage.
So you talk about something interesting there. I'm a bit of a stringing dabbler. I dabble. I wouldn't call myself.
I know you dabble.
A great stringer at all. I would say I'm slightly above average. I can string a traditional with one string. That's all you need to know. That's the true test. To me, that's the test. Everyone has their test, sure. But to me, if you can string a functional pocket, single string, regular traditional, that's the litmus test to be call yourself a stringer on the lowest level. Kind of talk about how stringing has kind of impacted your life and how it led to other jobs in lacrosse besides the one that you already mentioned.
So beginning in that mom and pop store, it was just like, hey, this is the guy who's going to string your sticks. And, you know, everybody asks for something a little different. And so it was learning on multiple different heads and multiple different, you know, people asking, you know, I want a high pocket with no whip, and I want a low pocket with a lot of whip. And I'd start to challenge them, and I'd ask them why they wanted that. because I feel like that was something that, you know, maybe they saw a Paul Rabil, who is a monster. He's 6'3", 240 or something like that. And he can, you know, shoot a fly off the net from 15 yards away at 100 miles an hour. But these kids are in seventh grade and they're asking for the same exact thing, and they can't handle it. So it kind of led me to that path where, you know, I was working in the mom and pop store at Fudd Lacrosse, and then you know, I had a couple different jobs, you know, in a training center, you know, where I was working with a few friends of mine and was stringing some sticks and just pumping out what, you know, what people needed. And then, you know, I was approached by one of the bigger retailers to come and work for them. And that was, it almost became a production line for me. It was like, see how many sticks you can pump out. And you know, I'd put my head down and try to pump out, you know, 65 mesh sticks a day, and it was just ripping my hands apart. And that part didn't become as fun, and it wasn't as rewarding as, you know, some of the parts have been. But that's where I think I gained the most experience, just putting your head down and just teaching yourself and learning new things. And you know, I have very different ways of accomplishing, you know, the pocket that I come up with. And, you know, I'll string and unstring it 10 times until it's the way that I want it to be. You know, I've never really claimed to be the fastest stringer or anything like that. It's, for me, it's definitely quality of the product. And, you know, lacrosse has definitely been a huge part of my life, and working in those stores and having that experience as kind of, you know, the stringer for those, you know, jobs that I had, definitely kind of set the, you know, the wheels in motion for me to be where I'm at right now.
So how long were you like a professional stringer?
I'd probably say every bit of like 10 years. So I started in high school and, you know, worked through college, you know, especially in the summertime, all the summer tournaments I'd go to and just sit there and string for a weekend. And like I said, did it after college. And yeah, so probably every bit of a decade, I would have considered myself a pro stringer. You know, not in title wise, but that's, you know, that's basically what I was just stringing as many sticks as I could and trying to make as many people happy with a, you know, a really well strung functional stick. That was kind of my thing. It's like, I don't need to pump them out fast. You know, it was about the quality for me.
What is the easiest stick and mesh to string for you?
For me, it's probably something that I have used a lot myself. I would say a Nas with Hero has probably become the, I could close my eyes and do it kind of stick. I kind of gravitated to those once the No Nas came out. That was kind of my go-to always. But for me, I always kind of picked the weird sticks. I always had, you know, like a Brine Matrix or an STX Primer or like something crazy that just like no one would use. And I just would pick up and mess with and just tweak and tweak and tweak until I got them right. And it's so funny. I wish I had pictures of all those sticks now. It's like, it's so crazy to think back. Yeah. I heard your expression when I said Brine Matrix.
We had a kid. So I said that not because of the stick, but I played with a kid in college that this dude, he could shoot like almost 100 miles an hour. And I just played like, you know, regular D3, right? And
yeah,
he just couldn't catch. And he used the Brine Matrix. And it got to the point where like we were in the locker room and I was just like, if you bring that stick onto the field, like I'm going to break it. Like, get something that you can catch with. And he never switched, and he eventually got the name Drop Ball Joe.
Drop Ball Joe.
Drop Ball Joe. Drop Ball Joe.
That's not a name you want to have on the field.
He was a great, you know, he was a great player except for the catching part. And
that's a huge difference. You got to be able to catch it first before you can shoot it.
So. Big part of the game, kids. it's funny. So The other thing, other part about that that I wanted to touch on that you kind of talked about a little bit, you were saying you use all these weird sticks and you could get like good pockets in them, even with like the old crusty mesh and the six diamond. Do you think that you can get a great pocket in any stick with the modern sticks right now? Is that like,
absolutely.
Okay. So explain why you can do that.
So it's crazy to think about where we've really come from. So when I started playing, it was like, okay, you had the option of a titanium shaft or like an aluminum shaft with a black or white brine edge, and basically standard issue gloves. And it was like, that's what you had. And now there are so many SKUs, so many options. And I think it's really difficult for people to say like, this is my favorite. I think this is the best because there's just so many options. But I think the technology in not only the stringing, you know, the community has come up with new ways of tying knots and all these ways to attach the mesh to the head. And now we've gone from having 5 sidewall holes to 27 sidewall holes. And you're like, do I really need that many? But yeah, I think that there's no question about it that the technology that we have in the sport right now is absolutely the best that we've ever had. And I can't wait to see where that evolves to. I don't know whether that means, you know, a more streamlined, you know, process for products, or you're going to keep seeing all these small companies pop up with their technology and certain, you know, ways of doing things. But the products that we have right now, it's difficult for me to see, you know, these kids just break out a factory mesh stick. Unfortunately, a lot of these, you know, beginner sticks and pre-strung sticks are done overseas, and there's not a lot of QC being quality control between the manufacturer and the product and the customer. So these, you know, a box of 10 complete sticks can get shipped directly to the customer without ever being seen by a retailer, which I think is going to change. I think that, you know, you see these smaller companies, you know, be it the ECDs or the String Kings, and the quality of the product that they're coming out with is really driving and pushing these other larger retailers who are kind of, you know, trying to sneak under and you save a few bucks here and there. It's really pushing them to drive their products to a much higher level. So I think you've seen across the board, you know, technology and sticks, gloves, equipment, helmets. I think everything has been steadily on the rise, which is great. Just like our sport, you're seeing a lot more people flock to lacrosse and it becoming ever more popular. I mean, it's been a slow and steady journey. But I don't think I could have imagined, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, just starting out and seeing lacrosse where it was, that I think it would be where it is now. And I can't imagine another decade down the road, you know, where our sport's going to be.
So you spent a lot of time working in lacrosse, and you don't work in lacrosse right now directly. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but why did you make that decision? What pushed you to make that decision to be where you are now and kind of, you know, tell everyone where you are?
So right now I live in Honolulu, Hawaii. Yeah, I know you probably all hate me now, but, you know, it was really difficult in the beginning. I never imagined that I would find a lacrosse scene out here or even a way to pursue my passions for the sport. And it was actually really something that, you know, I had an opportunity to come out here and I took it. It was, you know, a good time in my life to make a change. And so I did it. I bit the bullet and tried something new. And it was really a hard adjustment for me because I was like, wow, you know, I'm about to give up lacrosse, which has given so much to me. And I came out here and there are transplants from the Northeast and all over, ton of military guys. And we've got a huge, like way bigger than most people think, a really great lacrosse scene. It's very conducive weather-wise for us to play year round. The youth are really starting to take hold of it, because we like to teach the sport in kind of the old time way, where we explain where the sport came from. And in Hawaiian culture, that's perceived very well because it has history behind it, and they can kind of understand, you know, where something comes from when you explain the deep-seated history and really where it came from. And so it's been more adopted lately, and you know, we're having clinics out here, and next week we've got, I don't know when this is gonna air, but the 27th to the 29th of October, we've got a huge lacrosse tournament. It's one of the biggest in the world, and it's our 27th annual Hawaii Lacrosse Invitational. We've got teams coming from Japan, Canada, the mainland. You know, it's pretty wild. Men's and women's, everywhere from elite to grandmasters, and it's going to be a hell of a weekend for sure. And I'm really looking forward to it. We've got the pros coming for Wimmer. We've got your previous guest, Jerry Raganese, who called it the Wimmer Lacrosse Tournament, but it's really the Hawaii Lacrosse Invitational, just so we're clear on that. But yeah, it's really amazing that we've got such a lacrosse scene out here. And, you know, we put on clinics, and the pros, when they come out next week, will put on a clinic for the kids, and they'll have almost 100 kids. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're on a little island in the middle Pacific and you have 100 kids that come out for a lacrosse clinic, it's the most uplifting thing for me at this point, is to just grow the game and to make it bigger. And we had one kid, Lincoln, who actually played at Furman, who was the first Division I lacrosse player from Hawaii. He was born and raised in Hawaii, and then he went to play at Furman after playing at Onondaga, which didn't make, you know, kind of stressed our relationship a little bit, because I was at Essex and he was at Daga, and there's a little deep-seated animosity there. But it's really great that, you know, Hawaii lacrosse is a thing, and it's been phenomenal since I've been here the last 2 years. So
I would think, living on Hawaii, you eat a lot of fresh food. You said, you know, it's a lot of history and culture there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's good, because it leads into one of our sponsors. I wanted to tell you a little bit about RX Bar. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar. You know, what does that mean? The bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. They want to be transparent and upfront with the customers. They label the core ingredients, egg whites, dates, and nuts on the front of the package, and the ingredients that make up texture and taste on the back end, real cacao, coconut, etc. Beyond being a go-to snack that checks off a number of nutritional boxes, RX bars actually taste delicious, and I have had them before, and that is not a lie. That is true. They are very good. They don't need the fillers, additives, or chemicals, or the added sugar to taste that way. The core ingredients do all the talking for an RX bar. It's like eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds. Turns out real food ingredients, again, taste good. And whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. They come in 11 delicious flavor varieties. And they're also gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free, which is good, because I'm actually gluten-free because I have a degenerative disc in my neck. And it helps inflammation. So everyone that makes fun of gluten-free people, sometimes you have to do it for a reason. My reason is so I can keep playing lacrosse. But, you know, everyone has a reason. RX bars are great for a number of occasions. Breakfast on the go, snack at the office, throw it in your bag for the plane, which I'll be doing when I fly to Baltimore next week. Toss in your backpack for a bike ride or a hike, and or, you know, pre-post-workout snack, which is where I have one for the first time. Just want to let everyone know that's listening to this, you can get 25% off your first order of RX bars if you go to rxbar.com/lacrosse and enter the promo code lacrosse at checkout. That's rxbar.com/lacrosse, promo code lacrosse at the checkout. Definitely check out RX bars. We want to thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Now, you're talking a lot about the tournament. Are you playing on, is there a local team
So we have our Hawaii lacrosse elite team. So we practice every Sunday in Kapi'olani Park, where we're going to play the tournament. You know, as a group, between the elite, masters, grandmasters, we all kind of just split up the teams evenly and practice every week. And you know, the last few weeks, last month or two, we've been kind of ramping it up and playing more with, you know, this is the elite group, this is the masters group, this is the grandmasters group. So yeah, we've got, like I said, we've got kids from all over. We've got transplants from the East Coast, from the West Coast. We've got a bunch of military guys. We've got some West Point guys. We've got some, you know, Navy guys that played in Annapolis, and we've got a pretty decent team. Once we, you know, get the ball rolling and kind of settle into our game, we can definitely play.
So let's talk about String League Season 3, which we were both obviously involved in. Inside the Cross kind of jumped in for the first time for Season 3 this past kind of winter spring season, when that airs on YouTube, courtesy of Style and Strings. How did you kind of get the idea to get involved with that?
So it's kind of funny. I didn't really know much about String League in the first, you know, season or two, and I would always kind of throw my hat in the game, but never really, you know, took it seriously. And that's, you know, nothing against, you know, String League or anything like that. It was just kind of my own thing. And then Season 3, I'd gone to the convention and talked to some of the people that, you know, that I had met there, and I talked to Dustin from Style and Strings, and initially, I was considering, you know, helping out judging, just because I had been around the community and stuff like that. So I had initially showed interest in, you know, if you needed any help, Dustin, I'm more than happy to help. But he put together a way better panel than I could have been a part of, I'm sure. You know, with you, we had Barefoot, Joe from Throne, we've got Greg, we had Miles Jones, we had all the T-Bird, we had all these guys, you know, Lax All-Stars was a part of it, and Connor was hosting, and it was great, and it was something I just wanted to be a part of. And, if you look back on Instagram, I don't know what I was thinking when I first came up with the idea, that I just started shredding mesh. I just took the scissors to some mesh and just started making pockets. And I made this like really weird video with strobe lights and just kind of like wanted to freak people out and get people talking. I just was just experimenting with some stuff, and it got me into, you know, the top 25, and the top five was insane. You've got five of the biggest names in the lacrosse community on Instagram that there could have been. You've got Richie, you've got Lax Smoke, you've got Chris from Mainly Mesh, you've got Peepo, and you've got Coach Matt. And it's like, okay, can I compete with these guys? And I thought I could. And so,
Chris, you're being modest, dude. You smoked them.
It was, for me, I'm not as confident in stringing traditionals and kind of stepping outside of my bounds. I'm like a super mesh guy. Like, it's just, that's what I've been used to. And I kind of just pulled out all the stops. You know, I was like, if I'm going to go in this, I'm going to give it my all. And it kind of just worked out. It was, the challenges kind of worked out in my favor, and my artistic and creative abilities were just kind of pushed to the forefront again, which was fun for me. As kind of stressful as all the deadlines were and getting everything together. And I was the last one selected. I was the wild card. So I got my box a week later than everybody else. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, I wasn't going to let that, you know, be a reason why I couldn't win. I wasn't going to use any excuses. These guys are so much bigger and more popular than me. And, you know, I just did the work, and it worked out really well. I mean, I strung a stick made out of candy. I strung a stick made out of paper. And it was just a really fun, intense competition. And it was really intense, and it was 10 weeks long for me. It was, after that first week of entries, I strung more sticks than anybody in that competition. Because I had to string the initial stick. I had to string a stick to get into the top 25. I had to string a wild card stick. And then the other sticks that, you know, we had to string for the competition. So it was a lot. It was 2.5 months of producing and making these sticks for this competition. And I had a blast with it. It was so much fun. And the competitors were great. We had some really great banter on like a small Instagram group of us all talking and just like so excited to see what everybody would come up with. And you know, some of those guys had been in the competition before and had done really well. And I think I've really lucked out, to be honest. There's, like I said, the competition's really played into my favor, and I was just able to come up with something that worked.
Which one do you hate the most? Which challenge?
I really hated yours, to be honest.
Yes. That's what I wanted you to say.
As difficult as the food one was, I've given Greg some crap for that. I think I probably developed a couple cavities from stringing that food stick. I tried and failed at so many different kinds of food to string. I tried making a meat pocket out of bacon and beef jerky. I tried making a pocket out of fondant and cake and Rice Krispie treats. And the candy pocket that I ended up coming up with, it was so humid the week that I was making that the sugar started to compound and melt as I'm making it. So I'm like, I have to make this stick and have it hold a ball and just get as many pictures as I can before, you know, the ants and bugs come and destroy this thing. But I think the most difficult one was definitely yours. And I hate to give you that too, because I know you're so happy and
so
you're smiling
happy.
You're smiling from ear to ear right now. But it was extremely difficult trying to make a pocket out of just Inside Lacrosse magazine. Once I heard that, I was flabbergasted. I was like, I got to make a paper mache pocket or something. And it was so brittle and difficult to make. And I had to go with the subscription cards on the inside. Those were the best paper that I could come up with, yeah. Other than like the newsprint. So that was probably the most difficult.
The story behind that is pretty funny. So we did a shoot in Philadelphia, and all of us are, you know, all the guys you said, you know, Greg, Joe, T-Bird, Miles Jones, we're all there, and none of us know each other's challenge. Like, we didn't talk before. So we're all sitting there and they're doing all this filming, and I say mine and I can see everyone, cause we all watched each other's filming and tried to make each other laugh and screw up most of the time. Mm-hmm. And, I just see like, you know, Joe and Greg go, what did he say? Did he say an issue? What is that? What does that mean? And I step down, they'll ask me, they're like, that's impossible. I'm like, yeah, well, it's string league, dude. You know,
it was when I first got wind of that, I was like, well, this is starting off real well. Cause that was week one.
That was week one, which we didn't know either, but was pretty sadistic to have that be week one for sure.
It was definitely painstaking, for sure. And you know, it was really cool to see what everyone was able to come up with every week. It was like, Is my product gonna even be good enough to compete with the guys that I was competing against? That's what I was thinking every week, and I think that's what really drove me to kind of create what I did. And I was worried that, you know, these guys are gonna sneak up on me, or there's gonna be a traditional challenge and they're gonna smoke me. And I just was able to keep my head above water long enough. And then the last couple weeks, I was able to pull it out, and it was really exciting. And I had a ton of support from people all over, because they had seen, you know, the work that I was putting in, and they may not have known what really I was doing, but there were people who were just as excited as I was for the episodes to come out every week. And I got text messages and phone calls when, you know, I'd be at work. It's when those episodes would come out, it would be 1 o'clock in the afternoon for me here. And I'd get phone calls and text messages. I'd be like, don't tell me anything. I have to watch it still. So that was always kind of the exciting part, would be me trying to sneak off for a 15-minute break to watch what everyone else had come up with. That's what I was most excited about, was to see what everyone else's creative sense was able to create and see if I could even hang with those guys. And luckily I was able to.
So let's kind of circle back and talk a little bit about, you know, you keep talking about the community, the Instagram community, the stringing community. There's both good and bad sides of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's been the best thing to happen to that in the past, I don't know, let's say 2 years, and what's kind of the worst thing or a trend that you see now?
So I think the best thing to happen to it has just been the exposure. I mean, Instagram has been such a great jumping off point for everyone to create and to show off what they are able to make or to dye or to string. And you know, you see guys like my buddy Casey at Cruise World Customs, who's painting gloves and cleats, and you're seeing them on Lyle Thompson or Miles Jones. And it's just so awesome that you can kind of interject that artistic aspect into the sport. That's what separates our sport from every other sport there is the individuality of, you don't walk on the field and have the same exact setup as someone else does. There is way different stick styles and stringing, and you know, my sticks are always crazy dyed and you know, strung, you know, testing something new, and it's just really, really cool that we have that aspect. And you know, there are certain things that are being interjected now that I think is trying to take away from that, which I really hope doesn't happen. But I think kind of the worst thing for it is that kind of saturation that I'm talking about. It's a give and take, a good and bad. You know, now you see every single 12-year-old boy who likes to string sticks has, oh, you know, this is my stringing account and I'm a professional stringer, and you send me your stick and I'll string it for $40 or $50. And it's like, all right, let's take a step back. And you know, as much as I love seeing all that grow, and I mean, that's where we all came from, it was just starting it, but there are so many now, which is awesome. But it's getting flooded, which is good and bad. But I can't really say that this is a bad thing. You know, it's not a negative towards the sport or a negative towards the community. I think that we all help each other grow. And I've been trying my best, and I know a lot of the people who I talk to, Zach from Barefoot and Phil and Robin Laxtractive and Dan and Gopher Lax and all those guys that I'm constantly talking to, we have no problem helping each other. I like to use those contacts and like to use those, you know, friendships that I've made in the community to not only help, you know, myself, I use them during String League. I, you know, to go back to it, when we had to string a coiled stick that T-Bird and Styling Strings came up with as a challenge, I had never done coils before.
Yeah.
So who did I call? I called Phil. I called Phil and said, I don't know what I'm doing. And he was like, here's my YouTube tutorial. Phil, who's in a competition with me, sends me a tutorial on how to do it. That's how I know that our community is so great, is that like we're all so willing to help each other grow as a community. And that's what I love about it so much. It's so unique and it's so great and down home and wholesome and small still, that I like to call these guys my friends, and pro lacrosse players I can call on and text during the week, you know, they are my friends. They're more than acquaintances, and a bunch of them are coming out next week for our tournament, and I'm really looking forward to having them on island and showing them around and just hanging out with them. That's why I love coming back to the convention and seeing everyone and just shooting ideas off of everyone and see what's new. And that's, I just have such a passion for it, that it's like my pilgrimage. It's my Mecca to go to the convention every year. It's like, okay, I'm going to fly 5,000 miles to be at this place at this time, and it's totally worth it.
What one piece of advice would you give to, let's say, an aspiring stringer trying to not stand out on Instagram, but kind of, you know, make a job for himself, like get hired by a retailer or try to work for a manufacturer or try to be a product tester? Like, what are the thing? What's one thing you would tell them to do or not do?
I would probably say to use all of those advantages, you know, use everything you can to your advantage. You know, use YouTube, you know, use Instagram, ask questions. You just have to mess around. You got to teach yourself. That was the only way I learned how to do any of that stuff. You know, learning how to tie new knots and doing sidewall patterns. And, you know, that's not what it, like, asking for sidewall patterns isn't what it's all about, because maybe you don't understand this sidewall pattern, or maybe you aren't that advanced yet, but you just have to play around and try new things and be creative. And that's where most of the stuff has come from. It's just people fooling around and being like, whoa, I might have something here, you know, but bounce it off other people. You know, I have no problem when people shoot me a DM and ask me a question, you know, oh, you know, do you have any suggestions on how to do this? And I'll give them an honest answer. You know, it's not what I want to do is sit there for hours and hours and hours and answer questions, but I have no problem doing that. And I know that, you know, the people that I like to surround myself with in the community are the same way, you included.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, you know, it's the thing I always kind of come into is like the just insane requests for pockets. Like, I want a pocket that's great off the ground, has tons of hold but no whip, and I want it in this stick, and I want it to weigh this much.
I winding down after working at the retailer retailers for so long, right at the tail end before I moved out to Hawaii, I had a woman come in and specifically ask me if I could string a stick that was good for toe dragging, and I was flabbergasted, to be honest. You know, her son was not there with her. You know, if her son had asked me that question, I probably would have, you know, obliged and asked him, you know, why you wanted that, why that's your thing, you know. But she was there by herself explaining to me that all he likes to do is swim dodge and toe drag. And that's when I knew we were kind of progressing in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Was we need to get back to the fundamentals. And as much as I love, you know, watching the Thompson brothers and you know, some of these guys that are coming up and have these incredible stick skills. I mean, you saw it this weekend. I mean, we've got a kid, at Albany who hasn't played a game yet, and he is the talk of the town. I mean, Tohoka is like going to take this sport by storm. He already has, and he hasn't even played a game yet. People are trying to emulate that, and that's great, because you start to see these evolution of moves and dodges and things like that, and I think it's fun to practice that. You know, I am not going to confirm or deny if I tried to do what he did last week in practice this week, which I might have. You know, it's really, really cool to see that evolve, and you know, that's where sport grows. And you know, if we can get more Sports Center top tens and get the visual and people realizing that lacrosse is fun and individual, and you can really have fun and look cool doing it, this is a cool sport that we play. And you know, whether it be on the men's side or the women's side, some of these girls that you know, we're watching now have insane stick skills, and I don't know how they do it, because I've strung those pockets and I'm like, whoa, you've got something there. Between the legs, behind the back, you know, 70 miles an hour with a girl stick is like, blows my mind.
Yeah. Kylie O'Miller is crazy underrated, and men's players should watch her and try to figure out how she does what she does. 100% with you.
Completely agree.
Awesome. Well, Chris, that's going to bring us to the end here, man. I know we were worried about making the time, but I think we did it. I think we got it.
Yeah, done. I had a feeling that once you and I got to talking that it wouldn't be a problem at all.
Absolutely. thanks for coming on the podcast. Again, check out does the Hawaii Tournament have a website?
So it's Hawaii Lacrosse. You're going to see it all over. I'm going to be posting about it. You're going to see a lot of the pros posting about it. I know Jerry's coming out. We're going to have, you know, Scott Ratliff, Adam Gittleman comes out every year. We've got all those guys from Wimmer that are going to be posting about it. So definitely just keep up on Instagram for sure. I'm sure that there will be some YouTube videos coming out in the next couple of weeks, but just try to follow along. I mean, probably going to use like the hashtag Hawaii Lacrosse Invitational or Hilax when we're tagging stuff, but it'll be there.
Yeah, give out your handle so everyone can follow you.
It's gonna be Daily 44, so DEALY 44 on Instagram. If you aren't following me, I recommend it, and that's not just me, you know, pumping my own, you know, my product or brand. It's not really anything. I just like to post cool pictures and show you life through my perspective. So if you want to come along for the ride, feel free to give a follow.
Yeah, I definitely spite unfollow you in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people give me some hate messages every once in a while. They're like, I love you, Dealey, but I hate you at the same time.
Absolutely. So. Great way to close out the podcast. Thanks for joining us again, and we will see you next week with a new guest on the Lacrosse Industry Podcast. Have a great day. Sub-no.